This is WGRE 91.5 FM, Greencastle, Indiana.
Good evening and welcome to Music for Life, Music from DePauw. This week we showcase our Music of the 21st Century Festival and guest composer Joseph Schwantner. We chat with our faculty woodwind ensemble and introduce a new segment, The Question You Never Asked. We review two recitals from last week, and we chat with our band director, Craig Paré, about how exciting it was to play for Bill Clinton last semester and how they're working to welcome presidential advisor and distinguished DePauw alum Vernon Jordan as part of DePauw's 175th anniversary celebration. There are lots of exciting things happening this week in the DePauw School of Music, and we're glad you could join us for Music for Life.
Just a little bit of And the Mountains Rising Nowhere by Joseph Schwantner, who is our featured composer for Music of the 21st Century and subject of much of today's broadcast.
Well, we're here with Dr. Amy Barber, who is our percussion professor here at DePauw, but is also the coordinator of the Music of the 21st Century series. Welcome.
Thanks.
This is an exciting series, and it's been going on for 10 years now. So tell us a little bit, first of all, about the series itself. I know we've had some great artists here. How did it get started?
This is a project that I brought into being myself, and our first year was the 2002-2003 series, and it's exciting that this is our 10th edition this year. I'd say for me, the Music of the 21st Century serves two important purposes, many others, I'm sure, but these two particularly. First of all, I think in the School of Music, we tend to focus very much on the performance of music, on the recreation and performance of music. And I think we often forget that music is a creative art. And this event, bringing a really distinguished composer who's at the midpoint or even later in his or her career, really emphasizes the creative aspects of music, which we often fail to give our due to, I think. It really gives us a chance to hear and see how composers think and how they write their music, what inspires them, the techniques they use, the training they've had to have to do that, and their whole process of being a composer, making a career as a composer. So that's one. And the other is that I also think that we spend probably the majority of our time in the School of Music as performers in studying and performing music of the past, sometimes the very distant past. And I think we often don't give enough attention and study to the music that's being created in our own lifetimes, music of our time. This is sadly a kind of unique situation that didn't used to exist in centuries past.
That's right. We had Claude Zimmerman on last week, and he made that very comment. He said, we've grown so conservative because Beethoven was teaching his sonatas to his students. And so the music was truly immediate at that time. It was, I wrote it yesterday, we're playing it today, and new music was the music. And I think that as institutions of higher education, we've gotten involved in this process where we are very much looking back into music at the hallmarks of great music, but we're not looking forward as much. To what do you attribute that fact that we look in our rearview mirror pretty well, but we're not looking out the windshield?
I think partly it speaks to the power of music. We hold classical music, and especially those pieces that we consider the great masterpieces of the Western canon, we hold them very dear, and they're very powerful. And I think perhaps more than some of the other arts and other liberal arts disciplines, we're afraid to go to a new musical language, to new forms of musical expression. When I think of study in any of the other arts, dance, the visual arts, theater, or liberal arts fields like literature, sociology, political science, law, it's hard to imagine those areas not focusing on the here and now. Mm-hmm. It's so important to live in the present, to study what's happening now in our own lifetimes, and especially to project forward. I do think that the tremendous revolution that happened in Western art music around the turn of the 19th to 20th century was a real obstacle in terms of making contemporary music accessible to the general public, to audiences. The break with tonality and the search for sometimes very radical new sounds. But I think what many people maybe don't realize is that in more recent decades, there's been a much more eclectic approach to mm-hmm. music. And nowadays, contemporary music can mean so many different things. It can mean that difficult, dissonant music that you associate with 1920. But it also can mean music that's influenced by rock or pop or jazz or various world music traditions and integrates them in fascinating ways.
And we have the Indianapolis Symphony percussionist coming in as part of this, correct?
Yes, there's an interesting an opportunity that came up just by chance. Last fall, Dr. Schwantner was commissioned by the Percussive Arts Society to write a new percussion concerto, and the Indianapolis Symphony and its four percussionists premiered the piece in Indianapolis in November. And we were already in the planning stage of doing that piece. So our performance of it in February will be only the second performance of the piece. So that's been very exciting, discussing with Dr. Schwantner how this is going to happen. And we'll be having those Indianapolis Symphony percussionists come over here to work with our four student percussion soloists.
Yeah, what a great opportunity. And that's always exciting to me, seeing the music in the composer's hand. Now, I imagine that oftentimes when I pick up a score and I look at it and I think, Beethoven put a pencil on a piece of paper and wrote this pitch. Our students at DePauw get to see the people who wrote that. You know, it would be the equivalent of actually having Beethoven come talk to the class about one of his symphonies, or having Shostakovich show up and begin to discuss how he came, you know, on those great themes. So this is a remarkable opportunity for not just School of Music students, but liberal arts students as well. If there was ever going to be a great weekend in the School of Music, it's this one with Joseph Schwantner. The wide variety of music. He's got Pamela Coburn and a string quartet singing and playing together. We've got massive works for percussion with the major ensembles. A great opportunity to come in and talk to a living, breathing composer. You just don't get that opportunity anywhere else. And thank you for bringing that to us at DePauw. And we also need to be certain to thank Bob and Meg Schmidt, who've been with us from the beginning on Music of the 21st Century. And as I said to Bob when I saw him last semester, that we're an institution that's very proud of our history, and he's the person that keeps us looking forward. And we're very thankful to Bob and Meg for making this possible for us year after year.
Thanks a lot. I hope we'll see some people at these concerts
I'm
and
sure we
other
will.
Events.
Great. Thanks.
Oh,
that is just a snippet from the original recording of Sparrows by Joseph Schwantner, another great work you'll hear this weekend, conducted by Greg Risto and featuring Pamela Coburn.
I'm here with Dr. Craig Paré, our wind ensemble conductor, and he is also a part of Music of the 21st Century, working on the music of Joseph Schwantner. Welcome, Dr. Paré.
Thank you.
As a former wind ensemble conductor myself, I think Dr. Paré and I both hold Joseph Schwantner in high esteem, probably because of The Mountains Rising Nowhere.
Definitely.
What a great piece of music. One of the most fantastic pieces of music written. That was back in the 70s and really put him on our map, I think. We all became aware of him then.
It did. He hadn't been composing much for winds, and being in residence at the Eastman School of Music, Donald Hunsberger commissioned In the Mountains Rising Nowhere for the Eastman Wind Ensemble, and it opened up a variety of different sounds and colors and ways to write for winds that up to then composers hadn't been using. I might say, too, that part of my doctoral dissertation from the University of Cincinnati was looking at four landmark works for winds and how the percussion writing is used integrally in those pieces. This is one of those works, so I became very familiar with it, both as a player,
wow,
where I played it under James Croft, but also as a conductor.
I could have used you when I was doing that work. Now, this time, we're doing two new works. Well, not two different works, I should say. So what's the band performing as part of this great weekend festival?
We're going to perform his fourth original work for wind ensemble called Recoil. This is from 2004 and was commissioned by the University of Connecticut. And then a wind transcription of an orchestral work of his, New Morning for the World, which is based on works and speeches from Martin Luther King Jr.
Yeah, New Morning for the World actually was a piece that the National Symphony recorded, the premiere recording of that, and actually recorded it with the same narrator that we'll be using, which is Vernon Jordan, DePauw alum from 57.
Yes, they did.
And we'll come back to talk about Vernon in just a second. So I think especially for the community or for liberal arts majors, this music is really exciting, mm-hmm, because it's so unusual. It's so the tapestry of it is so unique. Tell us a little bit about Recoil.
Many things that he's doing as he progresses in his wind writing become a little more standardized in terms of the look of the score, the consistency of rhythm and melody, and also the return of many elements. One of the things that makes Recoil to me a little easier to listen to is that he goes the route of what many composers do, which is they use some material, go to some new material, but bring back older material. So they, mm-hmm, weave it, mm-hmm, in and out, and it's a very easy to understand form.
Right. We talked about this last week when we were talking about the fact that when we're listening, we need to be able to guess a little bit about what's coming so we have, mm-hmm, some idea of it. And the repetition, the fact that we bring something back, gives us a little leg to stand on as we're listening to a brand new work like, mm-hmm, this.
Listeners often pick up easier on a piece like that where there's a return literally or at least at a different transposition of any materials. There's also contemporary materials that are part of this. He has 12-tone rows. He has octatonic scales. I mean, there's a variety of things that are 20th and 21st century techniques. But rhythmically and in terms of form, it's a very easy to understand work.
The work with Vernon Jordan is exciting for us because Vernon Jordan, you know, very powerful man in American politics. He recorded this with the National Symphony as the narrator. And what a great recording. That's such a wonderful recording of that work.
It is.
And here again, as in last week we were talking about transcriptions, this is a transcription, was originally written for orchestra, now transcribed to be played by wind band. This has got to be pressure-filled to get ready to play with Vernon Jordan as your narrator.
It is. I'm becoming very familiar with that recording because what we want to do is work. I'm more familiar than the narration than the ensemble is, although we have that as a reference recording. But we want to get used to his rhythm, the pacing, his phrasing of how he uses these words. A variety of narrators have done this. Willie Stargell was with the Pittsburgh Pirates, mm-hmm, James Earl Jones, a variety of other speakers. So there's whenever you're working with a different speaker to narrate, it can have a very different rhythm, including with what the conductor's conception of the work is. So what we're trying to do is, because we have one rehearsal with him, I'm trying to really base our interpretation and pace and pulse and feeling of the music to what he's used to. Mm-hmm. So when he comes in, he'll feel more comfortable, and there will be as little adjustment as possible. It's going to be impossible to not have some stress or changes that are going to happen that day, but we want to be as prepared for him as possible.
They will rehearse this one time. He flies in, they rehearse it that morning and perform it that afternoon, and they'll pull it off beautifully. This has been the band some year because they have Vernon Jordan coming up, and they had Bill Clinton last month. They played for Bill Clinton. How are they feeling?
They're on air. The events that we've had this year, the music that we've had, the highlighting of all the different performances we've had, they're enthusiastic about this beyond belief.
Yeah, I want to know what university band gets the opportunity to play for Bill Clinton and Vernon Jordan in the same year. What a great opportunity. Yeah, we're fortunate to have you, and there's so many great things happening here. We're glad you're a part of Music of the 21st Century.
Thank you.
So let's hear a bit from a rehearsal this week of the band preparing for Recoil. You can always contact us about the show with comments, suggestions, and questions by emailing us at musicforlife@depauw.edu. That's musicforlife@depauw.edu. And we encourage you to do so. We love to hear from our listeners. We love to hear your questions and suggestions on how we can make the show better and more exciting for you. But we also have a segment called The Question You Didn't Ask. I know when I was in school, one of my professors used to say, the only dumb question is the question you didn't ask. It seems like that classical music is shrouded in mystery. There's so many things that we just don't seem to understand. Starting this week, we have a section called The Question You Didn't Ask. And if you have a suggestion for The Question You Didn't Ask, we hope that you'll email it to us at musicforlife@depauw.edu, and we'll be sure to put it on our next show. Joining me is senior French horn performance major Sam Crocker. Welcome.
Hi.
Sam's on the Music for Life staff. The question that we've been discussing is the issue of applause. No one ever seems to know when to applaud at classical music concerts. So, Sam, how do you know when to applaud?
Well, me, I just wait till everyone else starts applauding.
That's the greatest answer. Never be the first person to applaud at a classical music concert, and you'll never be wrong. But actually, there are sometimes the music stops, and everyone sits there quietly, and right. There are sometimes the music stops, and everybody applauds. What's the difference?
Well, usually, if a piece is in separate parts, I mean, we call movements, you'd clap after last one. You wouldn't clap in between the first, second, or second, third.
Why do we do that, Sam?
A lot of times, orchestras today say it's not to distract performers or to ruin the atmosphere of the music, you know, right after you stop.
Yeah, because there is something to that. I mean, a little to something to that, maybe right. Not much, but the idea that it is one work and it's to be heard as a whole without interruptions, no commercial breaks or whatever.
I mean, that makes sense, but as far as distracting performers, it's really a bunch of nonsense. Yeah. I mean,
do you get distracted? If people applauded between movements, would it distract you?
Oh, no, not at all. I'd almost prefer it, you know? If they like it enough to start clapping,
Let's hear it.
Yeah. Yeah. You like us. That's a good thing, you know?
Well, has it always been this way?
No, actually. Back in Mozart, Beethoven, Brahms' times, these composers would expect applause between these movements. And if they didn't get it, they'd be really offended.
They'd play a piece, and if they didn't get applause, they thought, oh, they didn't like this. But if they got rapturous applause, they loved it. And if the applause was big enough,
They would play a movement again.
Yeah. Yes. Can you imagine that? Going to a performance where, hey, you really liked it. Let's give it to you again. Now, part of the difference there, though, is that now we have CDs. We've heard the music so many times that we already know it when we go in oftentimes. Whereas these folks were hearing premieres and, you know, the first time it ever been played. So if you loved it, let's let you hear it again, because you can't go home and put it on the radio.
And you might not hear it again either, you know.
Ever again. Yeah. Right, exactly. So if Beethoven and Mozart liked it, what happened to it?
Well, it started with a man in Mozart's time named Baron von Swieten. Mm-hmm. And he was an aristocrat who started the, you know, sponsoring people to perform.
A lot of people. Beethoven, Mozart, he was involved bringing us a lot of great music.
Right. And so he started eliminating the whole thing. He'd glare at people during concerts.
He'd shush the audience between movements, like, don't do that. Yeah, right.
Yeah, so that's where the whole glaring thing started. We still have that around. I'm sure you know.
Usually coming from the conductor.
Right, yeah. It didn't really kick in until the end of the 19th century. You know, around Mahler and Wagner, they started getting more irritated, which kind of makes sense because the music was more, you know, connected. The atmosphere was really very important.
Right. And then in a Mahler symphony, you know, that might be true. And we would encourage any of you who have not ever heard a Mahler symphony to check them out. They're worlds in and of themselves. The first and the fourth are probably the most immediately accessible. But they do tend to hang together, and Mahler and Stokowski and a lot of other different people did not want that applause between movements. Now I see conductors turn around and shush the audience if they applaud between movements. As you know, name me any industry that you can have a ridiculous ticket price, have a secret code to what the words mean and what it's about, and then if you applaud and show that you liked it, you get glared at.
Right.
I mean, how do we chase these people out any faster? You know, that's crazy.
I know ours, Professor Smith, he appreciates it. He'll turn, give him a nice nod.
Exactly.
You know?
It's warm. It's welcoming. And,
right.
You know, Professor Smith's demeanor on stage is, hey, this is for you. You know, we're all
right
here together.
I mean, you want him to come back, too. And the worst way to have that happen is to glare at them if they show their appreciation, you know?
Right. I guess the simple rule of thumb is don't be the first person to clap. But if you ever wonder why we're not clapping, that's why. We wanted to keep the whole piece together. And if you do make a mistake and clap, hopefully the conductor or the performer will acknowledge that with a smile.
Right, hopefully.
Thanks for your time, Sam.
Thank you.
Last week we had Professor Sibberman on talking about his piano recital, and we had that this week. It was a great audience and a fantastic performance, everything we had hoped for. I just want to show you one beautiful moment of this, and actually it's a surprising one. It's not one that I thought I was going to feature, but it was such a beautiful moment. It's in the middle of this massive Gershwin piece, this tribute to Porgy and Bess, and then up comes Summertime, and it is so wonderfully scored and so wisely played that I just would like you to hear the entire section. Well, I'm here with Josiah Rushing, a junior percussion performance major here at DePaul. Welcome to Music for Life.
Thank you.
And we're glad you're here with us today. We're here to chat a bit about Joseph Schwantner and music of the 21st century. This is an exciting thing for all folks, no matter what your experience with music, whether you're a professional musician or you don't know anything about classical music at all. This is an exciting weekend of great music because he brings so many interesting colors and sounds, and he does it often through percussion. Mm-hmm. So this has got to be exciting for you guys in the percussion.
It is. It's very busy, but it's awesome. Yeah. We're all loving it.
So what are you guys up to? What's keeping you so busy?
Mainly set up. There's a lot to set up for orchestra, for band, for the concerto. There's lots of instruments to set up, and it's all in different arrangements for almost every piece. So
people are all often amazed to see so few percussionists playing so many instruments. As a trumpet player, I'm sitting in the orchestra. I'm going to play one instrument the whole day long. But how many instruments might you play in a Schwantner piece?
Depending on the part, you could easily be playing 5 to 10 different instruments. Oh, wow. So
there's a lot of moving. And another thing that people may not understand is that oftentimes now, the composers not only write the music that's to be played, but they draw the map as to where all of the instruments are to be placed so that everyone knows how to get to the instrument they need in the time that they have. Right. Is it confusing to try to read that many different instruments on a single piece of paper?
Beginning a new piece for percussion is learning a new notation, it seems like. So as you become more used to it, it becomes easier to do that. And it's not an uncommon thing anymore nowadays.
Right.
It's very common.
Where does Schwantner fall in the difficulty level for percussionists? I mean, of the stuff that he does. Is he incredibly easy, incredibly hard, somewhere in the middle?
Probably somewhere in the middle. It does take time and it does take quite a bit of effort to get our choreography and how we're going to set up things and what would be most efficient for getting from setup to setup and between pieces.
Right. So what are some of the unusual percussion instruments that he's called upon, either in these pieces that we're doing now or other pieces of his that you've played?
Well, in the concerto, he has some very unusual instruments, one being the waterphone, a metallic instrument, and it's a disc that you put water in, and it has these spokes that come up that you bow.
He does off a lot of things with water, the water gongs.
Right.
And tell us what a water gong is.
A water gong is where you take a gong or a tam-tam and you strike it as you dip it inside and outside of the water, and it bends the pitch.
Yeah, that's a fascinating sound. Very eerie.
It is.
Fascinating sound. So what's your favorite piece that you're playing this weekend?
I enjoy the concerto, partly because it's just a lot of fun and a lot of percussion. And
Tell us about the concerto.
Well, we're playing the second and third movement.
Of
the second concerto. And the second movement is in a semi-improvisatory and focused mainly on color, which is very similar to his first concerto, because the second movement of his first concerto is that focus as well. Not so much improvisatory, but based on color and lots of different instruments and the fluidity of the motion between them. And then the third movement is a raucous, just very kind of groovy, loud drums, killer mallet part, and ending with bucket drums and loud brake drums and cowbells. So
now his first concerto was for a single person.
Right.
His second concerto is for a percussion section.
Yes.
So it's interesting. You know, we've got Bartok's concerto for the entire orchestra, but typically a concerto is for a single performer. And this one is different because you really are relying on your section mates to pull off a challenging work as well.
And another challenge with that is to make sure that it's not just an orchestra piece with lots of percussion. You want to make it seem that as if we're all soloists, but we're unified as soloists too. So that's another challenge.
Right. Well, it's great to have you. Glad you could join us here on Music for Life.
Thank you very much.
So we have three special guests stopping by Studio B here today.
Hi, I'm Ellen Mankin.
I'm Sarah Chamberlain.
And I'm Elisa Sunshine.
Oh, it's great to have you here. Thanks for stopping by. I know you guys are busy rehearsing for Music of the 21st Century.
Yes, we are.
Tell me what you guys are doing.
We are performing Wild Angels. It is a Schwantner trio for harp, flute, and soprano.
And how long have you guys been working on this?
A couple weeks.
Yeah.
We've had the music since last semester, but I was off campus in Austria.
Poor you.
Oh, I know.
Suffering in Austria.
Such a bummer. But so we'd had the music to look over for quite a while, but we've only been putting it together and really rehearsing all three of us for a couple weeks now.
How do you like it?
I love it. It's really different than what I'm used to, but that's kind of exciting. Well, with the soprano, usually with onsets, you're supposed to enunciate, make the first word very clear, but here he likes to shape it more. Mm-hmm. So you start pianissimo and crescendo and then decrescendo again at the end of the phrase.
Great.
So it's been a challenge, but it's been really fun.
Is this different for you guys too?
Definitely. Well, I mean, one way that it's really different is that he incorporates percussion instruments, and instead of having a separate percussionist, and Elisa actually have to play the percussion.
So multi-instrumentalists.
Yes. Here. So I've been learning crotales with both mallets and a bass bow.
Yeah, crotales are these tiny little hard metal. They're kind of like a glockenspiel, except they're harder than that, and they have an amazing ringing. Bright.
It sounds so cool when I get it right.
Especially when it's bowed. When it's bowed, it's very cool.
Yeah. Elisa also plays triangle.
And we play glasses too, crystal glasses.
Uh-huh. Crystal glasses.
Yeah, little dinner trick there. Yep, right, exactly. Yep. Yeah, you're practicing with water in those goblets, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Just check.
We're trying.
So is there a favorite spot in this work you love?
Yeah. At one point, it really just becomes ethereal, kind of more mysterious. Voyagers of
thank you guys very much. We look forward to hearing this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
you. I'm here with Professor Orsina Smith, the conductor of the DePauw Symphony Orchestra, who will be taking part in our Music of the 21st Century Weekend. Welcome.
Well, thank you so much.
And the orchestra is performing two works this weekend, correct?
Oh, we're very excited about the two works that we're performing. First of all, Free Flight, Fanfares, and Fantasy. And then the Percussion Concerto No. 2, which came on the success of his first percussion concerto.
Right, we had Josiah on earlier talking about the fact that he got to perform movement of that with the orchestra here as part of the last year's concerto competition.
Right, as well, he's going to be playing the second movement from that on the Wednesday 10:30 recital next week, February 15th, with Joseph Schwantner in attendance. And that's when we're introducing Joe to the public, so we hope everybody can come at that 10:30 time in Thompson Recital Hall.
Right, Wednesday at 10:30, a new tradition in the School of Music, this weekly recital where we all come together as a school and we have the chance to perform for each other, and anybody who wants to drop by is welcome. It's open to the public as well. It's at 10:30 every Wednesday in Thompson. This one will be particularly exciting because we'll actually have an opportunity to chat with a living composer. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think the students really benefit from the idea of hearing a composer talk about their music and how they develop it from the smallest fragments. There are some unique instruments that one rarely gets a chance to hear. Besides the marimba and besides the xylophone, there are some mixing bowls that are used that create a beautiful sound. And perhaps one of the most unique instruments is called the waterphone. And you'll just have to come and hear it to believe it. Well, and there's kind of a crossover element to the work also as the student's bucket drum. A lot of people are not familiar with that, but there are these 5-gallon plastic buckets. Mm-hmm. And you turn them on end, and you have a drumming surface, and so the kids kind of go wild. But it seems very out-in-the-street kind of music making. And so Joe's blended all those things together. It makes it quite exciting.
How's the orchestra responding to playing works by living composers that are coming to watch?
They really bought into it, and they're ready to go.
This music is really appealing to people, whether they've had any experience in classical or orchestral music of any type, because the soundscapes are so exciting, and the rhythmic element is so exciting. It's such a great drive.
In hearing the premieres in November, of course, the audience was full of percussionists, but also there were a lot of lay people there who were part of the regular ISO subscription season. And when this work was done, the place just erupted and people stood and cheered for a long time and just kept bringing the percussionists back, because we don't get a chance to often see the percussionists in this virtuosic way. they're standing behind the orchestra adding their cymbal crash or their bass drum roll or a timpani roll. But here you get a chance to see the virtuosic nature of the extraordinary breadth of training that they get. I'll use the word primal again. It brings out those primal senses in the listener.
Right. Now, and so this is all part of the finale concert, mm-hmm. correct? And that's Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Sunday in Kresge?
Right, February 19th, 3 o'clock. The University Orchestra will begin the program with Free Flight, Fanfares and Fantasy, which has a lyrical interlude, and then returns to those fanfares that we talked about earlier. And then the second and third movements from the Percussion Concerto No. 2, the second movement featuring the waterphone, and the third movement featuring the bucket drumming along with everything else. So we have a lot of amplification actually set up too to support all that.
Yeah, that's going to be such an exciting performance. A wide kaleidoscope of great types of music, and Joseph Schwantner there, and Vernon Jordan will be there as well. It's going to be a rocking weekend at DeBar.
We're very fortunate.
Thanks for coming in today.
Okay, thank you.
So let's hear a little of the primal energy of the second concerto recorded in Kresge as the orchestra was rehearsing this week.
I'm here with Professor Randy Salmon, who is a member of the Faculty Woodwind Ensemble, and we're chatting about their upcoming recital on Monday, February 13th at 7:30 p.m. Welcome.
Thank you.
So tell me what's on this program.
Well, this program is very interesting. One of the newest approaches for our ensemble, for many years we were a Faculty Woodwind Quintet exclusively, And so in the last 5 or 6 years, we've been trying to change that, doing a lot of trios, a lot of quartets, and also adding other faculty members. So one very interesting piece that's going to be on Monday's program was something that our hornist Rob Danforth brought in, which was a piece, a serenade in Vano by Nielsen. Mm. And what was interesting about it is it includes cello, bass, in addition to clarinet, bassoon, and horn. So it's a little bit different color. It's a piece that most of us didn't know and have never played. And so we have a great opportunity to use faculty members Eric Edberg and Greg Dugan to join us on this program.
That's fantastic. And this is an interesting point, because if you're booked as a faculty woodwind quintet, then that says you're going to play quintet music and all five people are going to be playing at the same time. Whereas by saying we're now the faculty woodwind ensemble, it gives us the chance to hear some interesting voices just in pairs or trios, things that we wouldn't ordinarily hear. And then the fact that you're augmenting the group, that's exciting. Now definitely. We'll hear some string folks in a woodwind group. That'll be fantastic.
Yes, definitely.
So of this music, what is your favorite? Do you have a favorite moment in the music? I know you guys play a lot together. So in this particular recital, is there a moment that you think, wow, that's really...
You know, I think that one piece that has been really fun for us, we are doing in two different places in the program, a movement from an arrangement of a solo piano piece by Isaac Albanus. And we had never heard that, of course, before, and tried to rehearse it. And when we finally had an opportunity to hear the original for solo piano, realized that it was at its best done very slow. It was a tango, Spanish music, beautiful. And so what we decided, instead of doing a grouping of three of those movements, we're going to do one movement in the first half and one movement in the second half.
Oh, that's a neat way to do it.
It's a pretty nice piece. It's an arrangement that the Imani Winds have performed.
How about, you know, it's funny. We've been talking over and over again in our first show and in the first parts of this show about the transcription process. Everybody, you know, it's like musicians just aren't happy playing stuff written for them. They have to go steal it from everyone else. So
definitely. last week we were
talking to Claude about the fact he was taking instrumental music, woodwind music and string music and all of that, and stealing it for the piano. And definitely. Now here we are, wind players stealing it from the piano to bring it to the winds. So it's interesting process, because when we're taking it from the full group down to piano, we have to leave something out.
Definitely.
When it's going from piano to winds, is there enough material there to fill out the entire woodwind?
There is, and the only thing that was problematic for us is that all of the pieces in their original arrangement for the piano were slow and so beautiful and free that we had decided that the tempos needed to be faster to work for us.
Right.
And ultimately, we decided it might be better to just do them slowly but separate them so that we didn't do the whole arrangement.
And I'll tell you what I really love about the Faculty Woodwind Ensemble is that great variety, because everyone plays their instrument so beautifully, and the individual tones are really the tone of the clarinet or the tone of the oboe or flute or bassoon or horn. They're also individually beautiful. But in the Faculty Woodwind Ensemble, we get to hear them paired in so many different
definitely.
Ways. And then you guys also dress that up by breaking up and it's not always giving us the quintet setting. So it
right.
sounds like an exciting program.
Definitely, definitely. Looking forward to it.
We're looking forward to. Thanks for coming in.
You're welcome. Thank you.
This is just a little taste of the great music in store on Monday night at the Faculty Woodwind Ensemble recital. Thank you. So I'm here with two members of the Faculty Woodwind Ensemble on bassoon, Carastoli, and on flute, Anne Reynolds. Thank you for joining us today.
Our pleasure.
You've been in the ensemble for quite a long time.
I have. I think this is the third iteration of this group that I've been in. The good thing about this one is it doesn't have to be a quintet. It can be various combinations of instruments.
Right. It's great that we've kind of expanded from the quintet mentality to the ensemble mentality, because now we get to hear your voices in interesting combinations and have guests and that kind of thing going on. I really enjoyed your recital last year. Now, Kara, how long have you been performing with this?
I've been with this ensemble since 2004, 2005.
Yeah. Great. And so tell me about this program that you've got coming up. What's on it?
There's lots. There's two really short pieces by Barth, a Pasakaya, and Haydn, Joseph Haydn, a Presto, and these are brief, energetic pieces. Then there is some Latin music and a wonderful ensemble, which I haven't heard yet, I'm excited about this, by Nielsen, that adds bass and
cello
and subtracts me and the oboe player. Ah. So that's very cool.
Wow, I love the added texture. What else is on?
Well, we've frequently added textures. We have in the past, so it's nice to add a string component to this one with that piece. We've added some brass in the past, and we've frequently added piano. So that's nice to do that as well. And we also have a quintet by Onslow that we will perform.
How is it different playing in a chamber group versus playing in an orchestral setting? The chamber music setting is remarkably different from sitting in an orchestral seat.
I think with both situations, you have very personal relationships and interaction. But with this, it's a little bit more intimate in that there's fewer of those relationships. So there's more interaction. And I think that makes for a greater musical experience in many ways.
It's much more conversational.
Yes.
And it's always interesting for me as the listener to go out and listen to you play together, because I love to follow the conversations that go on between the instruments and hear how the color changes, but the conversation is the same. That's very fascinating. So what's your favorite moment in this recital? You've got a recital coming up, and is there, it's interesting to see, because sometimes everybody in the ensemble feels like, oh, it's the same, and sometimes it's all different, but what's the moment?
This, we've added that added layer and color and character of the cello, which the bassoon gets to play with a lot in orchestral settings, so that's very nice to have that added bass. So playing with the colors and the textures in that is quite enjoyable.
What about you, Anne? Is there a place where you think, I just can't wait to play this section?
Well, for me, it's not a place. It's when you move from one movement to the next, particularly when you move from, for example, the very first piece we're going to play, Barth, to the Latin. And they're such different feels, and I love how it's sudden. I mean, if you're in a good group, they change on a dime, on a something smaller than a dime. And it's such a pleasure to feel that complete shift to a different character. That's my favorite part.
Well, that's great. Well, thanks for joining us for a few moments today, and we look forward to your performance.
Thank you.
We spoke last week with Katya and Matvey Lapin about their recital, and what an incredible recital it was. So much great music here, and I'm just going to play one work. This is the Tchaikovsky from Eugene Onegin. Thank you.
Well, that wraps up our show this week, and we're glad you could join us at Music for Life, Music from DePauw. Our student producers are Sam Crocker, Adam Luman, Anna Gadula, and Phil Pasqua. Our show is produced and engineered by Matthew Champagne and recorded live in Studio B of the Green Center for the Performing Arts. I'm Mark McCoy. I'm the executive producer of Music for Life and Dean of the School of Music. And we're glad you could join us this week. Hope you will join us next week at 6 p.m. on WGRE. But more importantly, we hope to see you in the Green Center this week for the exciting performances coming up and for our exciting festival, Music of the 21st Century. We're going to wrap up our show with our own Vernon Jordan narrating the powerful New Morning for the World. Thanks for joining us.
When the history books are written in future generations, the historians will have pause and say, there lived a great people, a black people, who injected new meaning and dignity into the veins of civilization. This is our challenge and our responsibility. I have a dream. The dream is one of equal opportunity, of privilege and property widely distributed. A dream of a land where men will not take necessities from the many to give luxuries to the few. A dream of land where men do not argue that the color of a man's skin determines the content of his character. A dream of a place where all our gifts and resources are not held for ourselves alone, but as instruments of service for the rest of humanity. The dream of a country where every man will respect the dignity and worth of all human personality, and men will dare to live together as brothers.